Nathan Myhrvold is a scientist and a chef. And according to Myhrvold, this is one of life's greatest pleasures.
When hot bread comes out of the oven, it's just awesome. Yeah. It smells so damn good.
As I said, Myhrvold is both a chef and a scientist. He was former chief technology officer at Microsoft. So he's the kind of guy who, when confronted with the fragrant awesomeness of freshly baked bread, he's got questions. Lots of questions, such as...
why does it smell so damn good to us? That was one of the questions.
See, this is what Myhrvold does. He pursues the most scientifically detailed answers to the magic behind what happens in a kitchen. In 2011, Myhrvold did just that in the six-volume, 2,438-page Modernist Cuisine, a beautifully photographed and researched encyclopedia that answered every question from what's the physics of a poached egg to the chemistry of gelling. Well, now Nathan Myhrvold has taken that same scientific method to the world's oldest and most ubiquitous staple. So, back to that question. Why does freshly baked bread smell so damn good?
I can't quite figure it out, but I did figure out how it smells so good.
Tell me.
It has to do with volatile compounds that are created by the yeast.
Uh-huh. So the gases that the yeast are creating,
yeah,
by eating the grains.
Yep.
Yeast farts is what makes smells so good. Sorry, I have kids, and that's just like right where my mind went.
Well, yeast farts are what make bread rise.
Yeah.
So why not have another little side benefit?
Okay, so I apologize. I didn't really mean to take it down to the lowest common denominator because really, Nathan Myhrvold's latest book deserves much higher-minded praise. It's another multi-volume whopper called Modernist Bread, The Art and Science. And again, a couple of thousand pages of joyful investigation into everything you ever wanted to know about bread. So let's really get started now with the simplest of questions. When we say bread, what exactly do we mean?
For us, bread is microbially leavened.
Mm-hmm.
So that means muffins or cakes or other things that you leaven chemically with baking powder or baking soda aren't in the book. Except for one, Irish soda bread. Irish soda bread is wanting to be a real bread. And so it's the exception that proves the rule.
Okay.
And then of the world's flatbreads, it turns out some flatbreads, Indian dosa, for example, is a sourdough. Lavash, believe it or not, is leavened.
It is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. My mom's dosa recipe is still one of my favorites. So I know that process very well.
So here's a trick to try then.
Okay.
Bake it in a waffle iron.
A waffle iron?
It works great.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Dosa in a waffle iron is awesome.
Oh, my God. Well, actually, I can see why, because you'd get the crispy exterior that you need for a good dosa, but then you would maintain the soft fluffiness as well.
And it holds more coconut chutney.
Okay. You might have just sold me with that. Actually, really might have. I'm going to have to give that a try. Okay, so 4 years. Take me through this process. I mean, what were some highlights of the 4 years of research that you did?
One thing we always do when we start a project, we get all the books that we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, then you keep getting them as you do the project. But we take all the recipes and we enter them into a computer database. And the reason is we wanted to study what's the variation. Like when people say, oh, here's a recipe for a baguette. Well, how does it differ from other recipes for a baguette?
Yeah.
And I naively thought that because baking is reputed to be precise and exact and so forth, that we would find that all the baguette recipes clustered tightly together and all of the breads of other types would cluster closely together. Totally false. I think we have 120 baguette recipes. Most of the ingredients vary by a factor of at least two.
Hmm.
That's kind of crazy because you'd say, well, wait a minute. How could you have, you know, twice as much salt or twice as much yeast or twice as much water and still have it work? Part of the answer is that bread is really resilient. you can abuse it quite a bit, and it'll kind of still, you know, get made.
Tell us more. I mean, again, so many volumes here, but tell us more about the physics and chemistry of bread that you got a better understanding or a better appreciation for in writing the books.
Well, bread is a pretty amazing substance. Here's one of the cool physics aspects of bread. If you have a nice round loaf of bread, we've got a round loaf here in front of us, it'll take about 20 minutes to bake. If you had a piece of roast beef the same size, it would take hours to cook. How come? We did a bunch of experiments and we figured it out. Bread actually works like what an engineer would call a heat pipe. Mm. So it turns out that rather than in a roast or some other piece of solid food, it's conduction. And we know about conduction, right? If you hold a pan, the metal pan, and eventually your hand will get hot if the pan's over a stove because the metal conducts heat. But bread conducts faster than it should be possible. Huh. And the reason is that once the crust forms, when water boils inside the bread, it can't go out because the crust is already formed. So the steam pressure bursts bubbles and it sends the steam burrowing into the center of the bread.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. So for the same reason that a radiator radiates lots of heat and you have steam pipes in a building here in New England to heat it up in a cold winter, effectively the bread makes its own steam pipes by bursting a series of bubbles and penetrating all to the core.
Huh. Wow. So, and how were you able to determine that?
Well, we did a lot of experiments where we stuck thermocouples, temperature sensors, all throughout bread. We tried to figure out how it could possibly be going so fast, and then we finally realized it was a heat pipe.
Wow. So I have to ask you, Nathan, so you're you used to be chief strategist and CTO at Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
We're veering far away from bread here for just a minute. But how did you get – were you always a chef, a baker? I mean, how did you get so fall in love with the idea of really delving into the science and technology of the food that we eat?
So when I was 9 years old, I discovered cookbooks in the local library. And I decided I was going to cook Thanksgiving dinner all by myself. And I did. And from that point onward, I was a very serious self-taught chef. Then at some point when I was working at Microsoft, I decided that I liked cooking enough that I shouldn't be self-taught anymore. Mm-hmm. So I went to Bill Gates and I asked for a leave of absence to go to chef school in France, which Bill granted. It's the only time he's had that request, I think. And so I did go to chef school in France. Then after retiring from Microsoft, I spent more time cooking. And I had been aware that there was a whole set of modern cooks that were developing brand new techniques.
Yeah.
And I naively thought there should be some big book I could buy that would explain all of it. Only it turns out there was no big book, so I wind up having to write it.
Oh, we're getting away from bread here, but a couple more questions on this line. Because I think you're right, those modern chefs creating this whole new way of cooking, they look like laboratory scientists actually sometimes with their white coats and their stainless steel and the foam and the vapors, for example. But, you know, why do you think it's important to bring that sort of same scientific attitude into the home kitchen?
When my first book came out, there was a reporter who asked exactly that. They said, why do you think you had to bring science into the kitchen?
Because cooking is science. That's my answer. But
well, no, I said, look, science was already there. It's taking ignorance of science out of the kitchen that we're doing. Yeah. And there are people who say, oh, you're spoiling it, or you're destroying the soul of cooking. And I think that's just garbage. The thing that makes cooking wonderful is the way that flavors and textures can evoke thoughts and emotions and memories in us. It's an art.
Yeah.
And equipping an artist with the tools to understand how their art works is only good. In fact, the art I like to analogize cooking to is architecture. Most buildings on Earth are there to keep the weather out. They're not really great works of art or architecture, okay? But a great building can be a work of art and architecture. It can have soaring shapes and vistas and things that grab us emotionally. Well, in the same way, most food is fuel.
Yeah.
Okay? If you don't eat, pretty soon your tummy starts saying, wait a minute now. You get hungry. Most meals for most people, including me, are really there because you get hungry. You need them. But that doesn't mean that we can't harness the incredible relationship we have with food to do things that are magical, that delight us, that evoke memories of home or you know, comfort food is comforting. But food can be exciting and theatrical.
Yeah.
The high end of cooking has been about people delighting us that way. But regardless of whether you're at the high end or you're in the home, knowledge of how it works doesn't hurt you.
Yeah. You know, I always thought that we did ourselves a disservice however long ago when we as a culture tried to divorce science and art because, you know, in my mind, they are one and the same. So here's a couple of really basic questions. Do you have a favorite kind of bread?
Almost any kind of bread.
All of it.
Yeah.
All of the above. Okay. Is there a recipe that you go back to a lot?
Well, my single favorite recipe in the book is probably a chocolate cherry sourdough. That's really good. Wow. But there's different breads that are great for different purposes. I love dosa, but I also love brioche.
Yeah.
Now, those are two pretty different things. Indian bread is interesting because it brings up a fascinating sort of schism in the world of bread bakers. People developed ovens for a very different purpose. It wasn't for bread. Ovens were developed for firing pottery.
Uh-huh.
Well, somebody then said, hey, we could actually make our bread in one. But there were two different inventors in two different parts of the world. And one guy says, hey, I know, let's stick our bread to the ceiling of the oven. And the other guy says, oh, let's put it on the floor. And, of course, ceiling is what happens with naan.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Europe and the Middle East, they put it on the floor. Once you start putting the bread on the ceiling, you will never have pizza.
True.
Stuff falls off. you also won't have a pan bread.
Yeah.
It turns out you can actually bake a medium sort of brioche in a tandoor. We tried. But at a certain butter content, it falls off. But but up to a certain butter content, it'll still stick to the roof and you can make a brioche naan.
That's you can worlds are colliding in my head right now, actually. I'm going to have to try that. Because a heavy butter naan sounds amazing to me.
It is. And it really is.
Well, I mean, look, you've got, what, five volumes of...
Five hardcover, one softcover.
Wow. In a stainless steel box.
Slipcover, yeah.
Slipcover. I mean, who are the books for? Because it's more than $600, right?
$625 list price.
Yeah.
We don't control how it's discounted. My guess is most people will pay less. The books are for people who are passionate and curious about food. If you're not passionate about food, you're not going to spend that kind of money
anyway,
with a book. You're not even going to spend the amount of time it takes to flip through it, even if it was free. But you also have to be curious. Because lots of cookbooks will say, do this, do this, do this, and you'll get a result. And if all you care about is getting the result, and you don't wonder why, well, just buy those other cookbooks and do the recipes, and it works super well. I mean, you don't even need a cookbook. You can go on the internet and find a zillion recipes. Okay. The point of modernist bread is to cover the history, the science, the technique, and then tons of recipes that we have slaved over and sort of distilled from all the world's baking traditions. And if you are curious... that's compelling. There's a widespread belief in publishing that for a book to be successful, you have to dumb it down. And I don't think that's true. I don't want it to be true. And, you know, for my previous books, we've sold almost 250,000 of them worldwide. So somebody thought it was a good idea. And, of course, with the Modernist Bread book, you might discover, hey, bread is a narrower topic.
Yeah.
I've got no idea how it will sell, but so far, it's doing well.
Well, hear, hear for not dumbing things down, quite frankly. You seem to have so much fun in addition to the sort of investigative nature of the work you're doing and the creative nature. It just seems like so much fun. But I do wonder, have you come to the point where it's not possible for you to sit down at a meal anywhere and without thinking, like, how did they do this? How is it made? Like, just sort of deconstructing the processes around it?
I think that makes it better.
Okay.
I am not pro-ignorance. Sorry.
This is the man who's wearing the science doesn't care what you believe t-shirt.
Correct. Understanding how the process works does not lessen the impact. Okay, in the same way that if you go see some fantastic movie like Star Wars, at the back of your head, you know this isn't really happening a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And those really are special effects you're seeing. But the story is compelling and it grabs you. So I don't think that a knowledge that this is created by someone or even the techniques of how it's created lessens it.
No, it deepens our appreciation, right?
That's my view.
Well, Nathan Myhrvold's new book, or books, I should say, five-volume hardcover book is called Modernist Bread, The Art and Science. It's amazing, fantastic, and thank you so much for coming in and talking about it with us.
My pleasure.
And Modernist Bread is out next month. By the way, we've got a recipe for Nathan's favorite bread, that chocolate cherry sourdough that he talked about. It's at our website, radioboston.org. Back in about 90 seconds. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.